Have you noticed that when people begin a sentence, "I'm not a racist, but," that the disclaimer doesn't quite disguise the sprouting of some vaguely racist or sub-racist ideology? I'm not a racist, but. We certainly live in a time of isms: racism, sectarianism, ageism, sexism, nationalism, elitism. Add in snobbery over class or education, and you quickly see that we humans are immensely good at finding ways of erecting barriers between individuals and groups, communities and nations. The very fact that there is a whole new industry built around the issue of social inclusion implies that there is therefore the real possibility of exclusion for some people because of disability, poverty, age, ethnicity. And the church is required not just to follow grudgingly along that road of social inclusion, but to take the lead in taking practical steps to include people, make sure there's a sound system so folk can hear, there are large print hymn books so that folk can see, entry for those not able, toilets for those differently abled, attitudes and actions that speak louder than just theory. No point in the good practice, of course, if we've not got the good feelings, so that no one feels discriminated against, no one is made to feel they don't count as much as the others. For where there are divisive factors, that can slide into discrimination, then to extermination. The history of our times, the past century, teaches us that that's the way it works. First you exclude, then you discriminate, then you exterminate. The tendency to generalise and caricature is ever with us. All Germans are pushy, all French are rude, all Scots are mean. All young people do nowadays is hang about the town centre. All old people are out of touch with the times and the technologies. The passage we read in Matthew is a difficult one. We have to wonder what's going on. Are we watching Jesus learning to undo the prejudices he'd been taught from birth as part of his culture that were ingrained in his thinking? In truth, we can't really, in all fairness, expect him to think like a bleeding heart liberal of post-60s Western culture. He was a first century Jew, steeped in the cultural norms of his day, and bringing his revelation to a real time in real history. There were things he had to think through and come to fresh understandings about. He was a man of his times, a man of his place, or he was not a man at all. This is perhaps the bravest interpretation of the story. Or is Jesus testing his disciples, pushing them to a wider understanding, nudging them towards the realization that we are all brothers and sisters under the skin? Or is the telling of the story in this apparently harsh language of racial suspicion and old feuds simply Matthew adjusting the story as originally told by Mark to deal with the ugly exclusivism of his own congregation? Whatever way you slice it, it's not enough to be against racism and sectarianism. Like the minister whose congregation discussed the sermon over lunch. So what was the sermon about? Sin. Oh, what did he say? He was against it. Duh. Being against racism and prejudice is hardly a brilliant insight, hardly a starburst of Christian revelation. We can be challenged, though, to explore the question of the importance of self-awareness as the beginning of a way out of the prison of our thinking. You can understand the liberating effect of liberal thinking compared with the crippling and imprisoning effect of prejudice, bigotry, and its cost to individuals and communities, an offence against human dignity, and how ugly it makes the twist of our face and the mood of our community. We've seen the pictures. We know how hatred makes monsters of us all. Quite apart from the hurt to those on the receiving end, they write about it with feeling, the victims, the targets. A poem by a little boy in Baltimore. It's called Little Boy in Baltimore. Once riding in old Baltimore, heart filled, head filled with glee, I saw a Baltimorean looking straight at me. Now I was 8 and very small, and he was no whit bigger, and so I smiled, but he poked out his tongue and called me I saw the whole of Baltimore from May to December. Of all the things that happened there, that's all I remember. County Colleen, on these I stand. What does it matter? What's it got to do with Christianity? It's about a conviction to do with the worth of individuals and their status before God. Therefore, Christians are required to be at the forefront of the call to justice. Now, you might be thinking, well, globally, internationally, important though that may be, it's hardly an issue for us here in Geneva, international rainbow city of 100 nationalities with the flags flying to prove it. Well, not perhaps in the way as for others in other communities where racial tensions are almost tangible. And equally, we're grateful that sectarianism is mercifully absent here. However, there are questions. We still need to give answers to the questions, who are the victims in our society left on the outside? It can be newcomers, and we must be in the van of welcome. It might be young people and their rights and needs, and we must be energetic in pursuing forms of church life that give them their place and encourage them to grow in their commitment. Often, sadly, it is children and the need to find what works for them. It's not enough to expect them to do it on our terms without prepared to do any adjusting. We dismiss their needs with a shrug as if they were somehow second-class citizens of the kingdom of God. And if they exist, and if we take them seriously, these obligations to include and embrace and leave no one at the edges, if they exist, we have to wonder, in practical terms, how are these obligations cashed out? How can the newcomer tell? How can the stranger feel enfolded? How will the young person be able to know that we care enough about them to be responsive to their needs, care enough about them to know their name? Where we are shapes how we see things. It's good to change our point of view, sometimes literally. Travel does that, softens the edges of our xenophobia. Changing our seat in church enables us to meet new people, to connect in a new way. It's so simple. Who are these people that sit on the left-hand side of the church while we've sat for 20 years on the right-hand side? A new perspective, new perceptions. That's why going away for a conference or a pilgrimage or a church away day is so creative and important, if a bit unsettling. But real discoveries are made in new places. We walk in someone else's shoes for 10 miles and we see how it feels. The person who struggles with mobility, trying to get into our church. The new person coming round for coffee after the service, wondering if anyone will talk to them. The nervous young mother arriving with her toddler for their first visit. Will people turn round and frown if the children make a noise? Inevitably, we become more tolerant when we allow ourselves to be vulnerable and receptive, when we move away a little from the safe familiarity of places where we are comfortable, and when we risk new encounters. Enjoy the possibility of new ways of seeing. If we are to escape from the shackles of prejudice, bust loose from the straitjacket of stereotypes about foreigners, white people, black people, Catholics, Jews, English, women, old people, people with beards, homosexuals, pinkers, Tories, toffs, smokers, teenagers. We have to find our threshold, see what our blind spot is. We have to be alert to make sure that we see the real person, not the image that we've made them in. The story in Matthew is shocking and puzzling. Can it be that Jesus had things to learn, thinking to evolve? There's a theological conundrum here, where we have to wonder if Jesus, in his humanity, really did have to learn things, or whether somehow he was born with all knowledge and insight and never changed his mind, never saw things in a new light, never received any revelation of truth. Some people might find it hard to think of Jesus as someone suddenly or slowly coming to realize that the old, tired ways of thinking that he'd been operating with so long, that he'd been brought up with, thinking that just made you put people in pigeonholes, the Jew, the Gentile, in the club, not in the club, that way of thinking was not broad enough and loving enough and true enough, and he'd have to think again about who would be included in the gospel of his love. Perhaps, after all, it was not just for the Jews, but for all the children of God. Not just for the Jews, but for all the children of God. Now, there was a radical new insight. And the thing that brings us all together under the umbrella is that we all need that love, and we all hunger for the healing. A I'm not a racist, but we all, because the love of God embraces everyone, we all need to look and think prayerfully about the lines we draw, the circles we create that keep someone else on the outside looking in, and the way we function as a congregation towards the stranger, the visitor, the person who is a little different. For good, sound, theological Christian reasons, we need to be aware where our prejudices lie and where we understand the gospel of Christ's love to be located. And when we go into the world, into our neighbourhood, into the place we work, we need his grace to go with us so that we make sure no one is left out. No one.